can take this off?
Take that off. I'll put you on a bigger one. Large or small?
Small.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravana Jari Jamuna Tiravana Jari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravana Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajaka Acharya. Ashtotra Satya Sri Srimad. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Kiji. Anatta Kota Vaishnavinda Kiji. His Confounder Acharya's Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Kiji. Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasad Bhutala Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminite Namane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Vachanaya Niravishesha Sunyavaya Paschachide Sitaranya. Can I have one of those cushions? Just follow this thing on. Hold it up here and sit on it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 10, first canto, chapter 10, departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka, text number 1. Shaunaka uvacha, idva sarikta sprida atata, you know. Yudhisthira dharma bhutam varishtaha. Sahanujai pratya yurudha bhojana.
Sahanujai pratya yurudha bhojana.
Katam parvitta kim akar svititata. Hidva sarvikta sprida atatino. Yudhisthira dharma putam varishtata. Sahanuja pratya virudha bhojana. Katam bhavritta kim akara sittata. Jitva sarikta sprida ata yino.
Jitva sarikta sprida ata yino.
Yudhisthira dharma bhutam varishta.
Yudhisthira dharma bhutam varishta.
Sahanuja pratya bhuda bhojana. Katam parvitta kim akara sittata.
Katam parvitta kim akara sittata. Atta sarikta sridha tatayina. Atta sarikta sridha tatayina. Yudhisthira dharma pritam varishtha. Yudhisthira dharma pritam varishtha. Sahanuja pratya virudha bhojana.
Word meanings, Sonaka Uvacha, Sonaka inquired, Patva, after killing, Swavrita, the legal inheritance, Sprida, desiring to usurp, Atatayina, the aggressor, Yudhisthira, King Yudhisthira, Dharma Britam, of those who strictly follow religious principles, Varishta, greatest, Saha Anujai, with his younger brothers, Pratyavaruda, restricted, Bhojana, acceptance of necessities, Tatam, how, Pravritta, engaged, Kim, what, Akarasit, executed, Tata, thereafter. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Shonaka Muni asked, after killing his enemies who desired to usurp his rightful inheritance, how did the greatest of all religious men, Maharaj Yudhisthira, assisted by his brothers, rule his subjects? Surely he could not freely enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. Purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the greatest of all men of religion. Thus, he was not at all inclined to fight with his cousins for the sake of enjoying the kingdom. He fought for the right cause because the kingdom of Hastinapur was his rightful inheritance and his cousins wanted to usurp it for themselves. He fought, therefore, for the right cause under the guidance of Lord Sri Krishna. But he could not enjoy the results of his victory because his cousins were all killed in the fight. He therefore ruled over the kingdom as a matter of duty, assisted by his younger brothers. The inquiry was important for Shonaka Rishi, who wanted to know about the behavior of Maharaj Yudhisthira when he was at ease to enjoy the kingdom. Om Agyanatam Arandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So duty is the subject for today. And over the last several verses, going back to the previous chapter, two persons were pointed out in particular. Although everyone in this circumstance, at this time, in relation to the Mahabharata war, everyone executed their duty or their dharma to various degrees. But three persons are pointed out over the last several verses who exemplified the performance of their duty and are specifically pointed out as such by Srila Prabhupada in his purports and in the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Those three persons are Bhishma Dev, of course, the subject matter particularly of the last chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam, the passing away of Bhishma Dev. So Bhishma is one. You recall just a couple of days ago we heard about Gandhari. And Gandhari was another person. Actually, we've heard so much of the glories of Bhishma Dev, but Prabhupada makes a very nice statement in his purport. He says, Gandhari, although a woman, is no less than Bhishma Dev in character. They are both remarkable personalities in the Mahabharata. So Bhishma performed his duty in an exemplary way. Gandhari also. And the third person is described in this verse today as Maharaj Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira Dharmavritta. Yudhisthira Maharaj is described as the greatest of all religious men. That means, in terms of his dharma, religious men, it doesn't mean that he was the best pujari, or that he performed Vedic rituals very nicely, fire jagya. But when it describes him as the best among religious men, it means by performance of his dharma or his duties. And it's interesting that the word duty has certain connotations that we see played out in the life of all of these three great personalities, Bhishma Dev, Gandhari, and now Yudhisthira Maharaj. The definition, if we go to the dictionary, we'll find that the word duty is defined in this way. Duty is done from a sense of moral obligation rather than for pleasure. A sense of moral obligation rather than pleasure. That's the exact description that we find in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam today. Because it describes, Shonakarisi's asking, I know that Maharaj Yudhisthira is Dharmaraj. He's the greatest performer of religious activities, the greatest king in this regard. But he knows, and he asks the question, that I know that Maharaj Yudhisthira couldn't be enjoying his kingdom. Even though he performed his dharma perfectly and he attained the kingdom, Sonakarishi is inquiring that I know that he could not have been in an enjoying spirit. Why couldn't he be in an enjoying spirit? He was the king after all. So many years had gone by, long fought victory, and he finally won. Now it's time to, as Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, be at ease to enjoy the kingdom. Now was the time for him to be at ease to join the kingdom. But Shonakarishi asked that, no, I know he couldn't be enjoying the kingdom. Because he's Dharmavit. That's why he couldn't be enjoying the kingdom. Because he's a man of Dharma. And Dharma or duty, as described in the dictionary, meaning done from a sense of moral obligation rather than for pleasure. You see the connection. Shonakarishi is saying, I know he couldn't be doing this for pleasure. Because that's not Dharma. That's not why one performs Dharma, so that one can enjoy in times of ease. And so he inquires like this. I know that Maharaj Yudhisthira could not freely enjoy his kingdom with unrestricted consciousness. His consciousness was exemplifies Dharma. Not a time for enjoyment. Indeed, those that perform their Dharma often find themselves with nothing more than the obligation to do the right thing. Dharma means, in one sense, Dharma means being satisfied with just doing the right thing, regardless of what the results are. Just doing the right thing. Now, this type of moral obligation or ethical behavior, we might think, is the extent of what's being described. But actually, there's a very deep meaning to all these activities. How many times over the last few weeks when we were studying the chapter of Bhishma passing away, has there been the question in class? Well, if Bhishma is a man of Dharma, how come he didn't say anything when Draupadi was being disrobed? Has that question come up? People are trying to understand, well, how is it Dharma? What's going on? It seems like adharma, irreligious activity. But Bhishma Dev is pointed out as being a great man of Dharma. Well, there's more than just mundane morality that's being described. Actually, what's being described is transcendental rasa. That's what's being described. Lord Krishna, he's right there, he's part of this. And if we go to the Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we can get some idea of how the performance of Dharma is symptomatic of relishing transcendental loving exchanges with the Supreme Lord. So to understand completely, we have to examine that. So let's go to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and try to understand something of this chivalrous rasa. So I'll do a lot of reading here. Not that I'm expert in this subject matter, but it's explained very nicely in a simple way. Chivalry, or vira, vira rasa, we're familiar with this term, vira. There's three types of chivalrous mercy, chivalrous rasa. There is vira, there is dan, or heroic charity. There is daya, which is also described as heroic charity. And there's dharma, heroic religiosity. So if we think back on what we know about Mahabharata, we can know that there are different types of charity given. And there's a taste in doing that charity, making that sacrifice for others. And it's not necessarily, it might be misunderstood if we look at the characters exhibiting that. Who's the chief of giving charity in Mahabharata?
Karna.
But Karna seems like he was on the wrong side of Dharma, doesn't it? But he was very inspired to give charity, dan. So there's two types of charity, dan and Daya. So what is the difference? Dan Virya and Dharma and Daya Virya invoke heroic acts of charity for the Lord. Dan Virya occurs when one is aware of the Lord's supremacy. Daya Virya, on the other hand, occurs when one is unaware of the Lord's identity. Charity given in Dan Virya is motivated by a sense of worship or a sense of friendship. Charity given in Daya Virya is motivated by a sense of pity and compassion for the Lord. So those are two different types of heroic charity. But what we want to focus on here today is Dharma Virya, or heroic religiosity. Dharma Virya is the chivalrous mood of being always engaged in Dharma for Krishna's pleasure. And here's the key to those questions about the activities of Bhishmadev. Dharma Virya is the chivalrous mood of being always engaged in Dharma for Krishna's pleasure. Any person who is always ready to satisfy Krishna and who is always dexterous in executing devotional service is called Dharma Virya, or chivalrous in executing religious rituals. Krishna's Leela is difficult to understand. Sometimes it goes according to our own understandings of morality. Sometimes it goes according to the Lord's enjoying mood. So if we see the activities of Dharma, and indeed Bhishmadev was executing Dharma or contemplating Dharma in the vicious assembly when Draupadi was being disrobed. But it's all part of Krishna's plan. And so by executing his Dharma in the vicious assembly, he was actually engaging in the Lord's plan and for the Lord's pleasure. We can see it like that. To enjoy this taste of Dharma Virya, heroic religiosity, Krishna's pastimes are arranged in such a way that they are dependent upon and amplified by his servants, even though it seems like by their acting according to their dharma, it's a contrary to moral principles. But no, the purpose is the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. One performs one's dharma for that purpose. And even if it's contrary to mundane principles of morality, what's actually the right thing to do? What's actually the right thing to do? So we have to see to that extent if we're going to truly understand these activities. And these things being described in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Nimatsaranam Satam, which has already kicked out all materially motivated aspects of religion and established the transcendental Lord's pleasure as the supreme Dharma. We have to see the descriptions in that light, to that degree, not just in terms of mundane morality. But according to how the Lord is pleased. Now, this Dharma Virya is invoked by certain things or stimulated by certain things. If you recall, in our study of the chapter, previous chapter, text number, let me find it here. Text number 45 describes the moment when Bhishma Dev passed away. And it has contained some wording that is impetus for this Dharma Virya. It says, thereafter, both men and demigods sounded drums in honor, and the honest royal order commenced demonstrations of honor and respect, and from the sky fell showers of flowers. When we were reading this verse, what struck me is this description of how the royal and the honest royal order commenced demonstrations of honor and respect. Bhishma was a great general, a military man. And at his passing away, he was honored as such. He was honored as such by the royal order. We can imagine what that honor would look like, which evokes the Virya Rasa. Does anybody have any idea what we might see in terms of that royal order commencing demonstrations of honor and respect? How would it look?
Kind of like they have in the military nowadays with all kinds of instruments sounding, marching.
Yeah, it would be like a parade, wouldn't it? I mean, do you feel that? Sometimes you feel that swelling in your heart, that virya, dharma virya, when it's respect is being given. And there's soldiers marching, there's band music playing, 21 gun salute or whatever. These things, why are they there? Because they invoke, they're like udipans, they evoke this feeling of Dharma Virya. And so that was used to honor Bhishma Dev at his passing. And so there are several types of impetuses like that are described in Nectar Devotion. So I'll just read. Udipana. Hearing the scriptures is the impetus to becoming Dharma Virya, a hero of religiosity. Anubhava. The Anubhavas, the types of ecstasy that follow from the stimulus, are moral conduct, tolerance, sense control, and sense control are the results of becoming Dharma Virya. This describes Yudhisthira Maharaj in today's verse. After hearing religious instruction from Bhishma Dev, how did he enjoy the kingdom? Shanaka Rishi asked. How did he enjoy it? I know he couldn't be just enjoying it as a sense enjoyer, because that's not Dharma. So his Dharma was a transcendental emotion, and it was exhibited in terms of moral conduct, tolerance, and sense control. That defines Yudhisthira Maharaj, doesn't it? First today is Yudhisthira Brita. So these Anubhavas, they actually define the character of Yudhisthira Maharaj: moral conduct, tolerance, and sense control. Prabhupada says, Dharma Veers are produced after going through the authoritative scriptures, following moral principles, being faithful and tolerant, and controlling the senses. Srila Prabhupada describes how Maharishi Yudhisthira performed many yajnas to the demigods for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore, the section ends by explaining how it is possible to worship the Lord by performing sacrifices to the demigods. So Maharishi Yudhisthira gave pleasure to Krishna by being a Dharma Veer. That's why he engaged in the activities ultimately, not for moral purposes or any kind of mundane purpose to enjoy the kingdom, but to please Lord Krishna. That's why he performed his dharma. That's how we should understand the dharma performed. And actually, it's not that difficult, or it's not that rare, because we see this kind of display of acting or restraining oneself or dedicating oneself to a higher purpose. The United States Marine Corps uses such feelings, such emotion to attract recruits. There's a billboard that caught my attention on I-75. It pictures a young man, maybe 20 or 21, smartly dressed in a Marine Corps uniform, sharply saluting. The billboard carries the legacy of self-sacrifice, of nobility, of spirit, of being prepared to lay down one's life for a higher principle. So you know what the billboard says? It says, what does it say? A commitment to something greater than themselves. A commitment to something greater than themselves. Same kind of idea, isn't it? Why did Maharaj Yudhisthira fight the battle of Kurukshetra? Because he knows Krishna wanted that, so therefore his dharma was to please Krishna by fighting. But not for his own enjoyment. Prabhupada points out that this question by Shanaka is very important. This inquiry was important for Shanaka Rishi, who wanted to know about the behavior of Maharaj Yudhisthira when he was at ease to enjoy the kingdom. He wanted confirmation that, no, Maharaj Yudhisthira is actually a man of dharma, who's actually performing his dharma to please Krishna and not to enjoy his senses. Therefore, he had to be restrained in his consciousness. That was an important point for Shanaka Rishi to establish. And so he did so. Same point as used in terms of the Marine Corps. Of course, we know that feeling is where it stops, the similarity. People engage in warfare for more selfish purposes in this world, and generally speaking. So that's not real dharma, especially because it's not even moral, or it may be moral, but it's not aimed at pleasing Krishna, which is the real basis of moral dharma. So just one last point, and that is that we're talking about duties and morality and following those duties. Where do these duties come from? That's the question. Where do duties come from? Does anybody have an idea?
Manusamhita
has a lot of duties, yes, but how do they arise in our lives?
Social obligation.
Social obligation, yes. Responsibility. Varnashram, I like that one. We're born into this world with so many obligations. This is a unique contribution of the Vedic literatures, especially to societies and cultures like in this country. People think that, or people don't think that they have any obligations. They think we're just born and we take it from here. But that's not a fact. The Vedic literatures explain. Devarshi bhutapta nirnam pritrinam nakinkaro nyayan nirne charajan saratmana yaksananam saranyam kato mukundam pratihichakartum. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligations, and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to who? This is where when we're born into this world, we're born with a lot of obligations, and this is the list of them here. To the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is another form of dharma. Sometimes we find, actually, especially people from cultures where demigods are worshipped, or demigods are part of the worldview, that to surrender to Krishna is hard because people accept, well, we have obligations. I have obligations to my family members, to the demigods, even to the general living entities. And if I don't perform those dharma, if we don't perform that dharma, well, first of all, one's considered dharmic if one follows or tries to satisfy those obligations. And there's a fear that if I don't follow those obligations, meet those obligations, then I'm going to be liable in some way. Where is this concept in Western civilization that I'm going to be liable, that I have a debt that has to be repaid just by being born? It's practically non-existent. Yeah, there's an entitlement. Not obligation, entitlement is there. That's a good point, thank you. But for a devotee understands these obligations are there. And you may say, well, I see you're neglecting them. How can you be a dharmic? I see you're not worshiping the forefathers. You're not respecting the demigods. So how are you dharmic? Well, we're dharmic because of surrender to Mukunda. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled. Not that they're just dismissed, but they're fulfilled by the performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Same point. Same point of why Yudhisthira performed his dharma. Why Bhishma performed his dharma. Not from a moral purpose of trying to satisfy the demigods or the forefathers, but to please Krishna. And that takes care of all the obligations. That takes care of all the obligations. So, we are free then not to enjoy sense gratification, but to experience and taste transcendental rasa by serving Krishna. And that service may take the form of executing religious activities or dharma in the way that Maharaj Yudhisthira executed them, or the way they were executed by Bhishma Dev, or the way they were executed by Gandhari.
Gandhari is such a stark example. Dharma led her to enter the fire of her husband's self-consuming fire. People can't understand. How's that Dharma? Well, two ways. It's not done for sense enjoyment, but it is done to please Krishna, to set the right example. So these are some thoughts on Dharma. There's discussion, question. Yes, Prabhu.
Could Dharma be enjoyable, and if we're enjoying it, are we doing it wrong?
No, certainly.
Can Dharma be enjoyable, and if we're enjoying it, are we doing it wrong?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu answers your question. Harinam Prem, Prem Dan, Harinam Sankirtan. Enjoy the kirtan of the holy name. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would meet in Shiva Sangha, which is non-different than the Rasa Leela ground. And he would enjoy every evening chanting and dancing party with his devotees. Were they performing their dharma? Of course, they were pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Was it wrong that they were enjoying it? No, it wasn't wrong, because that's the dharma, the supreme dharma, pro dharmo for this age, is to engage in Harinam Sankirtan. But in a more esoteric manner, even though performance of dharma may look like it's kind of suffering to the individual, they're not suffering. They're getting a transcendental taste from their surrender to Krishna by performing dharma. So even if it looks like it's difficulty, not enjoyment, it's actually enjoyment. And that's an important concept to understand, because if we think that, if we look to material sources for spiritual satisfaction, then we're never going to find it, because we're thinking we're looking in the wrong place. For transcendental, if you want to see how we're enjoying, don't look that this person's performing so many austerities, or this person seems to be in a distressed situation. No, that's internally they're feeling something different. And we have to look for the internal indications of satisfaction, not the external.
How would you answer in relevant to American culture, where church promoted the New Orleans devastated, you know, a few years back they had a hurricane or tsunami something. And they were distributing hot dogs, and they also approached me to give donation. So then I was having a discussion that, this is religious activities, according to them, that to help the poor and needs. But at the cost of violence, hot dogs, they want to take care of this. Now, people, the young girls, they are very happy, joyful. So in one sense, his question will be, or his, in relevant to his question, that they were happy, and the church is happy, and the people who is getting hot dog, they are going to be happy. But all three of them has to suffer. Is that really religious?
Well, I think that we refer to Srila Prabhupada's conception of what happens in the West. That the people are not demonic, but they're just ignorant. And because of ignorance, they try to do good in ways in which, because they have no transcendental knowledge, no way to break the cycle, they end up doing sinful things in the name of piety. And so they just have to be instructed. They have to be given knowledge. And if they're given proper knowledge, then they can understand that, yes, we shouldn't kill the animals to try to benefit someone else. Because we have to act dharmically or according to principles of Bhagavad Gita in ways in which we don't harm others. So harming others to help other people is kind of a confused state that we find in terms of all types of mundane morality. What to speak, not just here, also in India, you'll find people doing things like sacrificing animals. And isn't that why Buddha came?
Yes.
Because they were killing the animals in a religious service. So Buddha came to stop it. You know, you're in ignorance here. You know, you don't know how to do these things. So take instruction. And if you're looking to the Vedas, then I reject the Vedas, he said. Because it's not, those statements aren't as important as what you're doing by killing the animals in the name of religion. So that's our job, to give knowledge to society.
Now to look at the other side of the panorama, this verse, Prabhupada quote this lot, not lot, but to me in Mayapur, there was one tape was going on and on and on, that's how I learned it. It says, Matnimittam kitam papam api dharmaya kalpate. Dharma is that which only for my pleasure. This is Krishna himself spoke. And Prabhupada, sometimes, like in this lecture, he says, so our standard of morality, immorality is to see whether Krishna is satisfied. If Krishna is satisfied, then it is morality. If Krishna is dissatisfied, then it is immoral. And he goes on, and many lectures you see, he quote this, he says, what is standard of religion from that angle, from Prabhupada angle or Krishna side? That anything is not, whether Yudhishthira Maharaj should lie or not to Dronacharya, is it moral or immoral? From Krishna's angle, it is immoral from dharma angle, but for the Hindu angle, majority Hindu think it is immoral.
Because absent lack of knowledge of Krishna.
Yes. They think they know Krishna actually, but they don't.
Yes. Yes. Nobody got a team.
Thank you so much for such a wonderful, thoughtful class. I'm actually always amazed how both you and your wife go to the dictionary and make the class more potent. but I thought of a couple things while you were speaking. One, this definition of dharma. It's like the very definition of the mode of goodness, that it's poison in the beginning, but nectar in the end, doing to please Krishna. And one thought that came to me when you were describing how acts that appear wrong, but they're done to please Krishna. I thought of, there's one time when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, I think it was on his Vyasa Puja day, and he was saying, oh, they'll come and see that I'm sitting up here. Who is that on the big seat? And in the course of that talk, he said, I am prepared to become the most arrogant in the service of my spiritual master.
Most arrogant.
So it's like he appeared to common people. Oh, how very proud. He's accepting worship. But he was following Lord Chaitanya's order, by my command, be guru.
Yeah, that's very nice. Thank you.
There was one other point, different topic, later towards the end when you were talking about our duties to our forefathers. One time, Swarga and I went to see a lady. We had heard there was a woman who was like a medium. Other devotees had gone. So we went to see her, and when Swarga was with her, the lady said, I'm feeling the presence of many, many ladies, and it was like Swarga's forefather ladies. And she said, they're thanking you for what you're doing.
Wow. Wow. See, so much goes on, we have no perception. We're like, there's a spectrum, and we have a very narrow band, but other things go on. But people will tell you, oh, you're just imagining this or that, you know, because they're ignorant. So we have to give people knowledge.
The last two, you can read me.
This is Okilananda.
Okay, Okilananda. Did Maharaj Yudhisthira or Pandavas have hesitation to fight like Arjuna? Well, I'm not sure. We don't hear any description like we find in Bhagavad Gita of Arjuna's being bewildered. But possibly he just took the lead for the five brothers and put the, you know, was instructed by Krishna. So I don't know of any place where that's described. Do you?
I would say, like Arjuna, as Prabhupada says in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, that Arjuna was put into that illusion. So it's not like Arjuna was built up, he was put into that.
Mm.
So from that angle we can look at it. Others are not put into it.
Okay, yeah, no, others are not. He's specifically put into
it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Thank you for sharing Zoom last night. Did Maharaj Das, did Rupanuga Das have hesitation to fight like Arjuna? Oh, it's like, I don't understand. Yeah.
There's one more.
What is the difference between an action performed or not performed being the plan of the Lord and justifying one's actions because not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Lord? What is the difference between an action performed or not performed being the plan of the Lord and justifying actions? Well, I think we have to be sincere and act with integrity and not have a cheating mentality and justify actions which aren't described. That's why there's sages, guru, shastra, and sadhu. That's why they're there, to make the difference between what is just concoction in our own mind about what we should do and what is actually religious dharma to be performed. We have to take guidance of the Mahajans, the Shastra, and saintly persons. That's the difference between actions done because it's the plan of the Lord and actions done for our own sense gratification. Anyway, I hope that answers it. Hare Krishna, and glories to Srila Prabhupada.
That was very nice class, Yashoda Prabhu. Thank you.